Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk.
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Talk podcast. I am Luke Owen and I'm joined by Laurie Blake.
Hey, mate.
Hello, mate. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm all right, you know. It's Friday.
Got to get down on Friday. How you been? How's life been treating you?
Life's been all right, you know. Just been plodding along. Played a lot of Smash Bros. I'm really tired of lockdown. But yeah, I've been really getting into Smash Bros with my brother, which has been quite good. Obviously, it's been out for like 2 years and have not really played it very much. And now we start playing online most weekends and I've started winning.
Yeah.
Yes. That's all I care about.
Well, it has been a busy old day in WWE by the sounds of things. Major changes have happened. So we're asking the question, what is going on in WWE? Here is the show. WWE put out a statement saying, and this is a direct quote, "In an effort to streamline our creative writing process for television, we have consolidated both teams from Raw and SmackDown into one group led by Bruce Pritchard. Paul Heyman will concentrate on his role as an in-ring performer." So, last year, in fact, it's less than a year ago, it was in June, but it was less than a year ago, WWE made the announcement that Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff were coming into WWE, or coming back to WWE in the case of Bischoff, to be the creative directors of both Raw and SmackDown. Bischoff lasted 4 months, or thereabouts. Brian Alvarez, I think, reported, he said at the time on Wrestling Observer Radio, maybe Figure Four Daily, that he heard nothing good about Bischoff's run. Like, he apparently had no idea who anyone was.
Yeah, sure. But, I mean, SmackDown's really picked up since as well, hasn't it? So,
yeah.
You know what, out of the frying pan.
And yeah, and like SmackDown has been quite a, it's been a bland show for like pretty much since the Fox run. Its last few weeks haven't been that bad, but like it's been like a bit of a, you know, it's picking up. But I wouldn't exactly say like, oh, they've completely turned it around. Now, WrestleVotes are reporting that regarding the creative change, some sources indicate that Raw has been a mess lately. At times recently, the show has been changed up to the point of air. While the blame isn't solely on Heyman, he is the one taking the fall here. It couldn't continue like this was an exact quote I got. So, yeah.
You kind of got to imagine that is one of those situations where what Heyman wants to do with the show is not what Vince wants to do with the show.
Yep.
And I don't think, you know, this change doesn't say that Paul Heyman is creatively bereft. It doesn't say that he even had bad ideas. It doesn't say that the show necessarily even was the product that he wanted to make. It, you know, there's always that opportunity in WWE that Vince has swooped in the last minute, heard the storylines that were going to go ahead and gone, oh, I don't like those, so do these instead. And that is why at the last minute, everything's being changed and kind of rather than blame himself for making it really awkward. It's much easier to fire somebody and install somebody who, you know, they've been saying about Pritchard that his vision for Raw is more in line with what Vince wants. Which,
exactly,
you know, yeah, that if that just smoothing the creative writing process, and part of the creative writing process in WWE is not just having ideas, it's getting those ideas past Vince, then this is probably the way to do it. And just be like, if you have someone who already thinks like that and knows what Vince wants, then you're going to have far less arguments.
I've brought this quote up quite a few times. It was from the Attitude Era podcast when they were reviewing Kane's autobiography. I think this was on their Patreon. But they were talking about, like, Kevin made the point that Kane is the perfect example of minds coming together. Because so the creation of the Kane character in 98, because you had, or 97 rather, because you had Vince Russo's VHS video store rental, movie loving, love of the fantastique, you know, that you had Jim Cornette's love of long-term storytelling and building a character over time. And you had Bruce Pritchard, who knows what Vince will say yes to.
Mm.
You combine all those three together and you got Kane. And that's exactly it. Like, Bruce Pritchard is the ultimate company yes man. He knows, like, if you give him 10 ideas, he will be like, okay, well, these are the two that Vince will like, so we'll only present these two ideas.
Mm. It's just, it's seemingly just not worth it to do anything else, is it?
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't, this obviously, I think there's a, you know, this causes a bit of a stir in the wrestling world, and people want to speculate about it. Raw and SmackDown should have had combined creative teams the whole time. Like, this is the thing that WWE keeps getting slammed for, is the complete directionlessness of people transferring across brands. Like, you know, we've had wild card rules. We've had just sort of doing away with the brand split, really, to some degree recently. And people aren't the same characters when they move between brands. They're not in the same feuds. They're doing things on two different brands that are completely different. Like, people should have a story. Though, we were talking about this for the fight show about Charlotte Flair. Like, Charlotte Flair has been on every single WWE product recently. Charlotte Flair is a different person on every WWE show. You know, as NXT, she's sort of a bit of a douchebag champion. That's how she was presented. And on Raw, she's Charlotte Flair, this sort of, like,
the hardest working woman.
Yeah, the hardest working woman. On SmackDown, she's sort of in the mix with other people. It's like, it would make sense if storylines crossed brands, and having a creative writing team that all is in together, that works really well, because then if you are going to cross somebody over, you can have a reason for them doing it.
Yeah. And, like, it's the reason why they had Bischoff and Heyman come in originally was because they wanted Raw and SmackDown to have different feelings. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's because that's what Fox wanted. Fox wanted SmackDown to be this more sports orientated product. In the end, it just became Raw, but again, and, you know, like, it's, They have been different shows, though, because Raw has been focused on building new stars. It has been looking at younger talents and being like, okay, who can we create here? So let's look at Angel Garza. Let's try and do some stuff with Cedric Alexander. Let's try and do some stuff with Umberto. Bearing in mind as well, these are a lot of lads that Vince McMahon has then just cut off at the knees. The only one that he's really successfully managed to get through all of this is Drew. Drew was a Paul Heyman project. He won the Royal Rumble because Heyman was pushing for Drew to win the Royal Rumble and to main event against Brock Lesnar at Mania. That is Drew. That's been Paul's project, and that's one that's worked. Everyone else that he's tried to do, Buddy Murphy, Aleister Black, they've all been more or less just leveled out and haven't progressed any further. On SmackDown, on the other hand, Pritchard's been doing the sort of thing that Vince likes. You know, he's done Roman Reigns getting covered in dog food, or did Baron Corbin and Roman Reigns feuding for 8 months over dog food. Like, that's Pritchard all over. And he's now doing the Jeff Hardy drunk driver storyline thing. You know, who shot Roman Reigns? The backstage angle that they did last year. Like, that's all, like, Pritchard as well. So SmackDown is airing tonight. They've already taped it. And one of the angles that's airing on tonight's show is a contract signing between Jeff and Sheamus, where Jeff Hardy throws urine in Sheamus's face. Like, that's what Vince wants. And it's always this kind of frustrating thing where people are like, oh yeah, the creative process doesn't work, so Vince just fires people. It's like, well, you're the one making the decisions.
Yeah, well, exactly. This is the thing. You can't make decisions. They go badly and then be like, well, it's all of your fault for suggesting other ideas that we could have done.
No, it's the kids that are wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the thing, like Paul, I don't know. It depends how Paul Heyman thinks about this, I guess. Like, maybe he's relieved that he doesn't have to keep coming up with brilliant ideas that get, you know, quashed at the last moment. Maybe he's quite happy to go back to just taking his paycheck for managing people, especially when it's someone like Brock, who, you know,
isn't there a lot.
You don't have to do very much. But yeah, it's a shame, really, because, yeah, like to just do. I think the biggest problem with WWE that most people would argue is the sort of the Vince-centric nature of the product. Like making a product, we're making a global product that goes out to millions of people and has millions of fans, but we're making it for one man.
Mm-hmm.
And really that's all we're doing. You know, this is like when Kevin Smith made that documentary for Prince thinking it was going to go somewhere and it just went in the vault. Like this is, you know, this is the equivalent of that, but we're just accidentally getting to see it. Like this is, it'd be more interesting to give it to somebody more radical to lead the writing team. Somebody who's going to take WWE in a different direction, because the current direction that they're in, as proven by the kind of ratings fall when there's no fans in arenas, just isn't vibing with people. People aren't really chiming with WWE right now. I think SmackDown has been in a hell of a rut of just sort of hokey storylines, quite boring storylines for everyone else who isn't in sort of they're not Mandy Rose and Otis in a love triangle. Like, you know, there are a few standout stories from SmackDown since it went on to Fox. And none of them, funnily enough, are the sports angle that they were asked to do. SmackDown has actively pursued people who aren't like sports stars as its main talents recently. So like, it's completely baffling. And Raw has tried to make a go of making new stars. And yet every single time it's the crushing inevitability of them just being like, oh no, you're just a mid-carder now.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned earlier, like Wrestling News reports is that Bruce Pritchard's vision is said to be more in line with what Vince McMahon wants. PW Insider have said the decision obviously was a Vince McMahon call. One source noted that Vince McMahon has been very upset and openly frustrated with Monday Night Raw as of late. The series has taken the hardest hit in terms of viewership during the Steve Corino pandemic. And the ratings really appear to be a key factor of this. And it should be noted, next month is an investor's call. So Heyman is, once again, he's the scapegoat. So that Vince can go into that investor's call next month and people can say, like, why aren't ratings good? And you're like, well, it's okay because we've got rid of the guy that made all the bad ratings on Raw, Bruce Pritchard, because SmackDown has had a dip in viewership, but it's not been as drastic as Raw's has. So they can say, well, Pritchard didn't lose as much, so he's now the creative guy over on SmackDown. And as we talked with WrestleNomics, with Brandon from WrestleNomics at the last investors call, the investors aren't looking into this too deeply. Like, because I asked Brandon, like, you know, why do people buy into what he's saying? And like, and they go, yeah, as long as Vince is still in charge, the investors don't mind because Vince is the one that created the product. And so as long as he's happy, the investors are happy.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you know what? There's in that sort of business in which they are still making an ungodly amount of money doing WWE. If you're an investor, there's not really much point. You know, like if the business was failing, then yeah, take a really keen interest and really look into it. But like if you're just making slightly less money during a global pandemic, why would you look closer? Like the answer seems like it's obvious, right? Like it's you just go, well, it's COVID and that's it. I think, yeah. And I think that's the thing. I think Raw has been the better product out of Raw and SmackDown during this time. I think Raw has at least tried different things. It's had better wrestling. It's used underused stars and talent. I think the problem for people watching it is probably that it's still 3 hours long. Well, you know, yeah. that was the problem before. And it's even worse. It's even more exacerbated when people are like, well, I'm kind of struggling to get into wrestling as a thing anyway. So like, you know, watching this now for 3 hours actually does drain you even more than trying to watch it normally, especially when the matches are shorter.
Yeah. PW Insider, so Mike Johnson also added, with Heyman's exit from his position on Raw, Bruce Pritchard rises up to become one of the top executives for the company, which, as PW Insider reported when we broke his return to WWE in February 2019, was always the plan. So, so that seems, I mean, that's quite a horrific sentence. We also had this, like, so Pete, Ollie and Pete, you know, they're the news team at the moment on WrestleTalk on the YouTube channel. And Pete posted up this quote in the Discord. This is from a Paul Heyman interview in 2013. Once you write the shows with Vince McMahon, it's kind of like Icarus flying too close to the sun. If you get a second chance to be Icarus, you're going to fly towards Jupiter. I don't have any desire to write the shows anymore.
Oh,
Heyman.
Oh dear. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? It's like, what is the point? This guy used to run his own show. He's like, he's perfectly aware that he can make people like wrestling.
Yeah.
His kind of wrestling. So, like, I guess working for Vince and just being told, no, that's not the stuff that we're gonna like. And yeah, I don't think Heyman is like right on the bleeding edge of what's cool in wrestling right now. He's definitely got very 90s attitudes towards what will make good sections, but some of them still hold up, and some of his ideas and his desire to push new talent is all really good stuff. Some of the other sort of more borderline misogynistic stuff and a bit ropey comedy, yeah, that maybe that can go away. But
exactly,
I think he's a sort of boundary pusher, Heyman, and that's what's kind of interesting. I think that's he pushes boundaries in sort of in not a really try hard way. I think Jeff throwing urine at Sheamus is quite try hard to be like edgy. And I think the way that Heyman does it and the way that he sets up kind of big moments isn't so obviously trying to push your buttons, but can push your buttons in the right ways. Look at the stuff with like Edge and Randy Orton and all that kind of thing. Like, all this stuff is very clever to get people riled up, but isn't trying so obviously hard. It isn't dog food. It isn't, you know.
Yeah.
There's no props.
And that's it. Like, you know, it's to say that Paul Heyman has had a perfect run on Raw, I think is quite a hyperbolic statement. He's done some really, really good stuff. Mm. But, you know, like the Lana, Lashley, Rusev love triangle was pretty awful. Like that was a dog turd of a story that went nowhere and crashed and burned. Similarly with SmackDown, like, you know, I can rag on Bruce Pritchard a lot, but that Mandis storyline was really good.
And Mantis, we could do Mantis from there.
The Mantis storyline was great and it continues to be good as well. Like, I mean, Sonya Deville lost last week, which, you know, really derailed some. But, you know, overall, I think it has been a really, really good stuff. It's just, I feel bad for Heyman because this really does feel like he's the latest scapegoat. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, when we get to the next quarterly investment and ratings still aren't up or ratings haven't bounced back, like, who's the next scapegoat then? Is it just going to
see a Bruce?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, is Bruce going to be out on his ass then? Is it going to be his fault? Like, it's a very, very bizarre working environment. I was reading through some of the replies to the tweet announcement that WWE posted. Not great responses. I did like Solomonster's joke, though, which was, glad to see Paul finally living his dream. Will he be a flippy wrestler or more of a submission specialist? Something in regards to Heyman's going to be an on-screen performer or an in-ring performer again. So, I mean, yeah, in-ring performer. On-screen character, I think, is, you know, more what they're talking about. So I guess Brock's coming back soon.
Yeah, well, Paul Heyman, maybe sort of part of this bartering was, you know, this is a two-way conversation because I think everyone knows, like, you can't work at WWE and not know the mechanisms of this and the reasons why this would be happening. If we're sitting here saying, you know, just before the investors call, they get rid of the guy who seemingly is responsible for the big fall in ratings. And it's not his fault, really, is it? Because I don't imagine Paul Heyman's going to particularly sit there and be told, yeah, you are directly responsible for the fallen ratings on Raw. And he'd be like, you made me rewrite everything.
Yeah.
So I imagine part of that, yeah, so there is that option that Brock is coming back. What I think is hopefully going to happen and slightly more juicy is that Paul Heyman might have said, give me this person as a project then. You know, I want to... And, you know, like, this is the same thing with the Brock stuff. Like, before Paul was running Raw, he was just working on the Brock storyline and stuff. He was very heavily involved in what Brock was doing and what they would be doing on screen together. And I imagine he'd probably pitch for that sort of same level of influence over what is going to happen going forward. And, you know, who can we... Hopefully, we get to see who the next Paul Heyman guy is. That would be really cool.
So the other note on this, or the sort of round this all up, is that Vince isn't just frustrated with Raw's falling ratings. He's also quite frustrated with NXT's falling ratings. Thankfully, however, according to Wrestling News, there is going to be no shaking up of that creative team. It's just we might see, or likely will see, more Raw and SmackDown stars going to NXT. Not moving to NXT, but just appearing on the show as a way to boost ratings.
And nobody minds that at all. That is the perfect situation. That's great.
And like that kind of rings true for, you know, this week's both Dynamite and NXT were down in the ratings this week, but that's kind of disappointing for, it's disappointing for both shows, but I think it's very disappointing for NXT because they've just come off the back of a pay-per-view. And usually when you have a pay-per-view, you get that ratings bump. And they weren't. They were down to 673,000. They just lost out to Dynamite, who only got 4,000 more viewers overall. Ooh. And the Wrestling Observer noted that last night's NASCAR broadcast drew 1.7 million viewers and a 0.3 rating in the 18 to 49 demographic, which likely took viewers away from both shows.
Wow, people would rather watch cars drive in a circle than watch WWE or AEW. That is sad. I think this is the thing. Like, NXT coming off the back of TakeOver. I think the difference with NXT is like you don't necessarily get those bit, like it's not known for big moments post TakeOver. Like the Raw after a TakeOver, the Raw after any pay-per-view, it's kind of when you expect there to be some sort of big surprise and a big shock and something to really sort of derail something that happened at that show. That's where WWE maintains its momentum. NXT tends to do people getting their heat back or sort of people coming out to just address the fact that they're the champion again. And they don't necessarily push much forward. I think this week's NXT was very good at pushing some stuff forward, like Scarlett coming out and confronting Adam Cole at the end was just a brilliant symbol and a wonderful bit of television, but like a very exciting vision of the future. But they don't necessarily they don't have these crazy things after takeovers. They normally have their debuts sort of at takeover. They normally have their big moments to close a takeover rather than sort of waiting until the next night. So I guess there's not that training in the NXT audience to be like, well, I'm really bothered now. Like, you know, I'll pick it up again slightly later and then we'll catch up before the next takeover. Because also that's probably months away now.
Yeah. And also the thing is that Mike Tyson, I think, really did have an impact for AEW's viewership because, you know, they've dropped like 200,000 maybe, or like there or thereabouts, maybe 150,000 mark since the Mike Tyson stuff, since Mike's not been on TV. So he did have he did have some positive impact, particularly coming off the back of that pay-per-view.
Also, so, people are just interested to see how he'd get out of his t-shirt this week.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, so let's dive into the Patreon mailbag. If you would like to submit a question to the mailbag, all you've got to do is become one of our awesome pledge hammers on Patreon over at patreon.com/wrestletalk and leave a comment in the community section. Do not email me. I will just lose it. The first person to submit a question is called Luke Bowers, killing it in the name department there, Luke. Said, I've been watching a lot of 2000 and the lead up to the Royal Rumble, and there's a lot of forgotten storylines, such as Edge marrying Val Venus's sister and Tori, not that one, being a so-called psychopath, and a bunch of wrestlers saying that different wrestlers want to have sex with her so Kane can beat them up. My question is, what is a forgotten storyline that you think doesn't get the credit it deserves?
Perry Saturn loves a mop. that got the recognition it deserves. That's fine. I'm fine with that bit of history.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Like, there's part of the Beaver Cleavage stuff. Like, when Beaver Cleavage failed and they tried to repackage it and he came out as Chaz and he had his girlfriend and the girlfriend was sort of lying to him and that brought about the return of the Headbangers. Like, there was some stuff in there that I kind of like. It's very, very, like, it doesn't hold up particularly well with under a modern lens. But there's bits and bobs.
This is the thing. You look up obscure wrestling storylines, and it's things that people talk about all the time. It was like, looked it up, and it was like Kane versus fake Kane. It's like Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio fighting over custody of Dominic. It's like this
an obscure one.
People talk about that all the time. Like,
it was a question on Quizzlemania this week. Aliada said that this whole greatest wrestling match gimmick is obviously never going to work with regard to the match actually being the greatest ever, but it is a good business move because the Backlash card is filled with matches one could see on normal TV taping, and all the matches have a fairly obvious winner. So with that, the gimmick as Edge versus Orton, with that gimmick for Edge versus Orton, people will tune in to find out what they do and how much it sucks. Even for people who don't tune into the pay-per-view, people will probably still watch like the match was based on reviews, be it horrible or good, because they want to see for themselves and how much WWE overbook it. I could be wrong. Let me know what you guys think. As always, lots of love from you guys from Pakistan. Hope you're staying safe and jam that jam. If I was to do some broad speculation, I think this greatest wrestling match stuff probably wasn't designed for this show. I think this was posted up on WrestleTalk.com yesterday. It kind of has a bit of a Saudi Arabia vibe to it.
Yeah, they love the biggest, greatest, bestest to wait something.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of feel like maybe that's what it was. But like, I kind
of... this would have been the greatest wrestling match ever, ... in the beautiful city of Riyadh.
Yeah, here you go.
So progressive.
But I kind of get what Ali is saying here as well, is that like, if you market something as the greatest wrestling match, you might get people tuning to be like, well, I mean, is it? People who are expecting it not to be, which I'm expecting it not to be.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, big time. Because although my prediction was that it's not actually going to be a match, according to reports, it actually is going to be a match and it's about half an hour. Oh, dear. That'll be a fun little stream for us on Sunday night. So people are going to tune in to be like, well, is it? And if it's not, to be like, what a load of crap that was. Get on social media. That was not the greatest match of all time. People are talking about it.
Yeah,
not in a positive way, but people are talking about it.
I think the more genius business move here is to name something the things that people will Google. And I think that is kind of the more insidious, clever bit of like marketing here, to call it the greatest wrestling match ever. And I think the conversation of what is the greatest wrestling match ever has very much shifted in the last 5 years to probably something with Kenny Omega in. Probably something with, you know, like there are so many like Dave Meltzer recommended matches above 5 stars that happened in Japan or on somebody else's programming that probably Vince is kind of, his blood's probably boiling a little bit that people are Googling that and that's what's coming up. So naming a match on one of your shows and your entire show, really the greatest wrestling match ever. If you try and Google it now, that's all that comes up. So this is one of those situations where he is just manipulating search engines to wipe out the idea that other shows might have had better wrestling matches than his shows.
Which means at the next pay-per-view, the match is going to have the gimmick of, does 5G call Steve Carino? Kano Mag. Hi, guys. This is my first mailbag post. I've finally become a pledgehammer after years of watching you. I remember the time Ollie was alone and the T-shirts were falling down during the Wrestle Ramble. My good times. My question is, if you could be the leader of a wrestling faction, which one would you be and why? And you can add a new member of your choosing from any era or company. I'm going to pick the Nexus because I bloody loved the Nexus.
I want to lead the Brood.
Oh, good shout.
Yeah, I want to lead the Brood. And who do I want to add? Sue Young.
Yes, that's great. Yeah, I'm going to pick Nexus. Who would I add? Any era from any company? Huh. I'm not sure on that one. That's a good question.
Yeah, I quite like my Brood to be sort of like to sort slowly siege into from just like vampires into like movie monsters. So I think Sue Young's a good starting point to be like, well, we've got a zombie.
Yeah.
So now we're gonna get a Frankenstein and we're gonna get
a PCO.
Yeah, exactly.
Manraj, hey guys, with the amount of time on my hands with the ongoing current pandemic, I was looking to rewatch the rise of wrestlers such as CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, Austin, and The Shield. Could you please point me in the right direction of where to start watching these guys on the network just before they broke through? I think actually the network has a lot of playlists for those guys, particularly The Shield. They've got a good playlist for them, and I'd imagine they've got one for Austin. Like Austin's rise starts at King of the Ring 96. But you are, there's a, like, bearing in mind is like King of the Ring 96 is where the start of Austin's rise is. He does not win the title until WrestleMania 98. So there's a lot of, like, that whole 97 period is a lot of build.
So, what's really good about the network, if you're using it on computer, I found this out being explained, is like, if you Google, if you search anyone's name and what you want, sort of what you're looking for, it will give you every single highlight of like moments, and it's really well done in the fact that it literally sort of will jump you to the moment in the show. So like when I was looking for stuff about Poison Mist, say, and taking stuff from that, like it would literally jump you to the moment the mist was used in any programming, and just,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it's actually they don't advertise it as such, but it's actually quite an intuitive system.
Dwayne the Gronk Johnson just picked up the new WrestleTalk book on a Kindle, and it's a really good read. It's probably the first book that I've read for leisure in the past few years. Anyway, as a newish podcast listener, I'm sorry if you've already done something like this, but my question is, you're creating a faction of 6 WWE wrestlers who never won a world championship. Who would you put in your faction? We had a Mount Rushmore question like this on Quizmania recently of like people who didn't win the titles. So that was like Perfect, Piper, Owen Hart. What was the other ones that we had? Oh man, there was something like, I feel like now like a lot of people have won the title because like I would have put Christian in there, but Christian's now won a belt. AJ's won the belt. Samoa Joe's never won the WWE title, Universal title. So he'd go in there.
I wish he would.
Yeah. Who else is a good one? Edge just won the belt now. I'm trying to think of like some Attitude Era guys that got a big push. Bradshaw got the belt eventually. Matt Hardy never had the belt, I suppose. So yeah, you could put him in there. Mm. God, that's hard. Coming up with 6 that's is
really
difficult.
Hard. Yeah.
6
dude,
is hard.
Dude, one is hard enough.
Isaiah Kennard, hope everything is going well with you guys and you've had a great week. I have a conspiracy type question. Do you think Daniel Bryan might be sticking around to have his last match with the one and only CM Punk? No, I think he's sticking around because he likes wrestling.
Yeah, he was desperate to get back to it. So I imagine he's sticking around. Yeah, and so he's gonna run that thing till the wheels fall off. Nick a phrase from The Undertaker.
Oof, and a sad documentary.
I found it so hard to watch because it's just like he keeps being like, yeah, I've got one more in me. I've got one more in me. And this is a man who will never be satisfied with his own performance at the age that he's at. And yet he's still just like, yeah, okay, well, I'm going to have another one then to sort of wash the taste of that one out of my mouth. Oh, no, that one was worse. I'm going to have another one to wash the taste of that one out of my mouth. It's like you should have just, at the Roman Reigns one, you should have just gone, man. Like,
yeah, it was when that Michelle McCool quote where like he has the bad match and she's like, well, that means he's having another one then. And it's like, oh, God.
But his I don't know, his theory on what a bad match is different to everyone else's, you know.
Dylan from Cork. Hello, lads. I'm writing this question after I've just finished watching NXT TakeOver In Your House. The set for the show looked amazing and it was a lot of fun from top to bottom. Got me thinking, what are some old pay-per-view names that you'd like to see WWE bring back? I always loved the Armageddon pay-per-view. The set was always cool. Well, that's it. Like, the thing with just bringing a name back, you've got to bring that set back as well. Like, that Backlash 2000 set with the swinging pincers is rad. The Armageddon 2000 set with all like the destruction, like the cars, like a big apocalypse has happened. You've got all these burnt out cars and barrels and stuff like that. That's what made the set. That's what made the pay-per-view name cool. But if you just brought back the Armageddon name now, it's just going to look like every other pay-per-view set. And like,
yeah, exactly. The sort of dressing is only saved for WrestleMania mainly. Like, oh, TLC gets a lot of ladders, but I think that's quite cheap to do. I don't think that's, Armageddon, your Judgment Days. I mean, WWE and, well, WWF at the time had a very sort of cool bent to all the name. It's funny that we've gone from that to like Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah. Oh, man, they should have lent more into that.
Stomping Ground.
It's a boot. Flame Ink Live. Do you guys like rock or metal? If so, have you heard of the Poets of Fall? They have some of the greatest music I've ever heard. Look up their other band, Old Gods of Asgard. It's their Alan Wake Control Games band. They are, in my opinion, one of the best storytellers in modern music. Well, thank you very much for the recommendation. If you saw our Facebook live stream that we did on Wednesday, we talked a lot of, I talked a lot about Slayer because it kept coming up in the comments.
Luke just talked about Slayer nonstop. And then sources.
Matthew Scheel, I've been wanting to learn more about past wrestling from the 70s and 80s and was wondering if you know any websites that have matches from that era. I still have the network, but I can't find old pay-per-views for some reason. Any suggestions on where I can find the older matches and promos? Thank you. Keep up the hard work. So, yeah, WWE own a lot of the libraries.
So much. They own, they own most of like the old NWA territories.
Yeah.
If you the difference is you have to look up what the match is and then search that on WWE.com, and then that will probably link you to the network. Like I said earlier, it is actually pretty intuitive and they have most stuff on there. It's just very difficult to navigate in a normal way without I think if you search on WWE.com, it will bring up videos, highlights, images, etc. for every single thing that you could imagine, and then you can jump right to the moment. It sounds like a really good advert for the WWE. And then you can jump right to the moment you want to watch, but you can, and it's very intuitive and it's great. So do that.
Brett Marriott. Hi, guys. I had a thought about the whole Charlotte situation. What do you guys think of the idea of having Charlotte enter Survivor Series as the triple women's champion, i.e. holding all three belts? And she has to defend all three belts in a three falls fatal four-way match against a contender from each brand at Survivor Series, with each fall being for a different belt. Play on the Kurt Angle, Benoit Jericho 2000 for the Intercontinental European titles. The original match, so what do you think about that sort of match? It also helped Charlotte get very quick to her 16 reigns.
I prefer the idea that Charlotte enters Survivor Series with all three belts and just has a match with herself or she could just do that in Night of Champions, I guess. I don't like it. I don't want Charlotte to be all three champions. I don't think anybody really does, except maybe WWE higher-ups. And I think they're using Charlotte right now to fill the Becky-shaped hole that they have. They need at least one horsewoman doing something. So that's why Charlotte, I think, has been sort of dropped from NXT and sort of fast-tracked over here. But I think that's going to last a little bit. And then I think Charlotte is going to come back to NXT and retake the title from Io Shirai, and then Rhea Ripley will win the belt back from Charlotte at sort of TakeOver around WrestleMania time, because that's long-term storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a question about that coming up, in fact. CJ Warren, first off, before that, says, first off, I just want to say Quizzlemania has been the highlight of my week for the past couple of weeks. I'm so proud of you, Luke. Thanks, mate. Recently, I decided to go back and start watching wrestling from the very beginning of Monday Night Raw. I'm going to watch every episode of Raw and all the pay-per-views, and then when WCW and SmackDown come along, I'm going to try and watch those as well. I'm assuming you mean Nitro as opposed to just WCW brackets general. This will probably take many years. Yeah, it will. But in the meantime, I'm enjoying it, and I'm on my way to King of the Ring 93. My question is, what match from 93-97 should I be looking out for? Excuse me. And also, are there any years I could probably just skip? Yeah, probably from 93 to 97, you can probably just skip. Certainly 95 through to 97. Those are some... 94 is not great either.
Why is wrestling history just like there are whole years you could just skip? You know, it's bad. Like, it's weird because like most TV shows, you go like, oh, you can skip the first season because it gets better at season two. But like WWE and... WWF and WCW, it's like, yeah, just skip a whole year in the middle, and then that, maybe then the next one after that year doesn't even matter. This one's
yeah. So I mean, there's some like good stuff throughout, like 93 through to 97, but it's just like 97 is when you could make the argument that the gears start to tick over and things start to kick, you know, and things start to get moving a little bit, like you know, particularly when, you know, they start to really compete against Nitro after Nitro starts, you know, kicking their ass and stuff. Toxic Dogma, first of all, super chuffed at Dominion getting a full review this month. Can't bloody wait for that. Absolutely. So patreon.com/rusttalk. Ollie and I will be reviewing Dominion from 2018 with that excellent, incredible, literal greatest wrestling match ever between Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada, the fourth one of their quadrilogy. Oh man, we've recorded a bit of it already, and it's been so much fun to revisit. There's also a lot of, as a bit of a tease, also just a lot of chat about the behind the scenes at WrestleTalk at the time, because 2018 was when you joined us. It was when you came in, and like Ollie was taking holiday, and then I took a bit more holiday, and it was like the creation of the Fake Adore character and things like that. So yeah, so it was a lot of fun to revisit.
Character.
Toxic continues. Flip Gordon recently talked about the idea of Villain Enterprises versus the Elite. What would be your thoughts on that, and who would you have represent the teams? Well, I think for Villain, you've got to have Marty, PCO, Brody, and Flip. Yeah. And for the Elite, I've got to go with Kenny, the Bucks, and Cody.
Yeah, I think that's the best. I think those are the best sort of.
Hangman Page being annoyed that he was left off.
Very good.
Owen says, I just listened to Ollie and Luke's review of Bound for Glory 2010, and one of the things that really stuck out in that episode was when you guys talked about Kevin Nash has screwed TNA on multiple occasions, but they kept bringing him back and putting him in prominent positions on the card. That got me thinking, would Vince and WWE ever put up with this kind of behavior? I imagine they would fire Nash immediately and never put him high on the card ever again. Oh, what do you guys think? Could you give your insight into why TNA kept bringing him back? Well, I mean, they kept bringing Nash back, and Nash does what Nash does because he's best mates with Triple H and Shawn Michaels, who have got the ear into Vince. And they kind of did it with Jarrett. Like, Jarrett left them quite a few times, and they kept bringing him back.
Yeah, and, star power is the answer. Like, you know, for a show like TNA, like they wanted to have names that were recognizable in the wrestling world, and they built a bunch of names themselves really effectively. But you know, there's something about a Kevin Nash that people are like, oh, Kevin Nash. Like, nostalgia in wrestling, I think, is even more powerful than it is anywhere else in the world, except maybe video games, right? Like, I think wrestling nostalgia is like one of the primal forces that controls the globe. And so yeah, I think someone like Kevin Nash going away and coming back is actually kind of even more beneficial than him being there the whole time. You know, like WWE likes to pepper their sort of season with surprise returns for like a week or 2 weeks, and then people go away, and then you have people coming back around the Royal Rumble and around WrestleMania and stuff. So, you know, kind of actually makes for good television when you don't know when Kevin Nash is going to pop up.
And I think Dixie Carter, for all the good that she did do for that company at some points, was a bit of a money mark, and people very, very easily exploited her niceness. I think that's what some people have said for us. She was almost too nice, and a lot of people took advantage of that. And I think, you know, maybe Nash was one of those people. And plus, you know, he's mates with Hogan, and Hogan was running the show. So
yeah, friends of all the people who are running the shows. I think there's also that notion of, like, if you are selling tickets for people to come and see the shows be recorded, you know, if you can advertise that Nash is going to be there, that's probably a boost in the sales as well. Like, this is the other side of wrestling, apart from just like, does it make a bad TV product? Yeah, fine. But did it make people buy tickets beforehand? That's a different question.
Irakli, if you could go back in time and attend any pay-per-view, which one would you choose? I think people will expect me to say Backlash 2000, but I'm going to say All In. I'd love to have been at All In.
Yeah, I think TakeOver Brooklyn.
Oh, good shout. Yeah, that's a really good shout. Prateek, I'm a history undergrad in India looking for a good master's program. I found some British universities very appealing. I'm interested in fields like world history, international relations, Asian studies, and unis like LSE, King's, SOAS, and Edinburgh seem like good choices. Of course, there's no guarantee I'll even get into them, but what do you guys think as Brits about these universities? Keep up the great, amazing work. P.S. I love British slang. Do you guys know any Hindi words except namaste? I didn't even know namaste was a Hindi word, I'm afraid, but I do know. Now I do. So I know that. Well, I can't. No, is the answer. I don't know any other ones, I'm afraid.
What were the universities?
LSE. Which one's that one?
London School of Economics.
King's.
King's is London as well. SOAS is the School of African Studies in London.
And Edinburgh.
Edinburgh. I don't know much about Edinburgh. I like Edinburgh, the city. I think it's a wonderful place. I would suggest going there, because London university life is... Edinburgh's smaller. And I think you get more of a sort of like community feel. London's a bit disparate, and you probably end up living quite far away from sort of anything good. My missus, actually, her offices are in SOAS's buildings.
Oh, really?
It's quite cool. I've been there before. But I would also just hazard a thing. SOAS is in a bit of financial trouble recently because of Steve Corino. So just double check.
Our plants. I'm a went to a jumped up polytechnic, so I don't think I'm in a position to really talk about universities. Marcel Jura, hey guys, I know that you are high on Drew as a babyface, and as you may remember, I had a big problem with him literally squashing someone's pet, Eric Rowan's spider. Pets to me are like family members, and I still think murdering someone's family member is not something that a babyface should do. It's been some months, and Drew has been established as somewhat the face of the company, but I have to say, I still don't get Drew as a face. Even if I try and blend out the animal cruelty, everything he does is Gronk-level jerkdom. I don't get his appeal. My question is, what's supposed to be small action ruined a babyface for you guys? That's a really good question. I don't know if that has been like something like that. Because like even I made fun of the Drew thing when it happened. You know, it was very clear why they picked Drew to be that guy, because the storyline sucked and no one liked it. So they had Drew to come out to effectively kill that storyline to get the big babyface reaction. And it sort of worked. But I did sort of make a joke. I was like, he did kill someone's pet, though. Like, it's not really
it wasn't a real pet. It's fine. We saw it and it wasn't real.
It was a mechanical spider.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know if there has been like an action that a babyface has done that's made me go like, oh, I don't like you as a babyface. Because like babyface like John Cena, I never liked him anyway.
Okay, so I struggled with Asuka towards the end of her NXT run, because she was still being presented as sort of like babyface Asuka. But she was really sort of cheating a bit to win. Like she was kind of weaseling her way into victories towards the end. And they never really paid off on that as like a heel turn or like even a character beat. It was just something that was happening in matches, because they were clearly, they'd done so many Asuka matches that they were looking for new ways to finish the matches.
She did it with Ember Moon, didn't she? She pushed the referee into the ropes when she was going up for the Eclipse.
Exactly, yeah. And I just think that sort of stuff, with that sort of undermined Asuka as a babyface to me. And then I sort of rejigged and was like, well, maybe they're just sort of positioning her as an Asuka, but I would love to see them do something with this, like this slow turn towards the dark side as she becomes more and more desperate to keep the belt now that she is completely and her streak, frankly. So yeah.
Alex Kirkman, have you ever considered reviewing wrestling films for Wrestle Talk Extra, which is our Patreon podcast? Either wrestling films such as The Wrestler or Foxcatcher, or ones with wrestlers in, like Playing with Fire or The Marine 26. You can have fans vote on it. I think we have talked about that in the past, like if we decided we weren't going to do a pay-per-view for that month. But I mean, there was some outcry this month because we decided to do non-WWE pay-per-views for this month, and there were some people who didn't like that. So I think if we didn't do wrestling pay-per-views, there'd be people upset that we're not doing that.
Like you don't want to review The Wrestler. That's depressing.
It's a great movie, but holy heck is it sad. Here's your egg saddle, lady. Ashleen said, I've mentioned this before, but I'm still new to watching wrestling full time, and I've heard a few people ask on here what matches to show people who are trying to get into wrestling. I know I've mentioned that I am somewhat of the I like the somewhat supernatural characters that connected with me being a horror fan, but I think sometimes it helped me understand a lot and appreciate wrestling more were documentaries, especially ones about Finn Balor and Becky Lynch. What other documentaries could be helpful for trying to get people to appreciate wrestling more? I don't know what the network's got on in terms of documentaries, but like WWE have done some amazing documentaries over the years. The Mr. Perfect one's really good, Life and Times of Mr. Perfect. Mm. The Brian Pillman one I seem to remember was pretty good, Loose Cannon. Yeah, I mean, but like their 24 series is always really, really good. The Dudley Boys one, there's a Road Warriors one on there as well. I think that's still on there. But the Road Warriors one was really in-depth. But I'd also recommend just Vice's Dark Side of the Ring.
Yeah.
Although it looks at the sort of the dark side of the ring.
Well, this is the thing. I don't think I was going to say Beyond the Map, but I don't think that's going to make you more like, that's going to be like, oh, this is pretty rough.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it makes you appreciate the resolve of people to do something like this.
I think that's what I was going to say. Like
maybe not the craft. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of looking at, you know, it does look at the dark side of the ring, but I think it just sort of like, it paints a picture of what the wrestling world can be. Mm-hmm. Kid Gaskin, I know you guys have mentioned the question on what match slash moment made you a fan of wrestling. My question is, what feud or rivalry made you a wrestling fan? For me, it was Taker Orton and the love triangle between Edge, Lita, and Matt Hardy. It's Cactus Jack Triple H leading up into the Rumble 2000 is mine.
I think mine would have been Rock Austin. That was about the time that I started watching wrestling. But yeah, I wasn't really watching it religiously because I was a child.
Pratik Shetty says, I'm not a regular AEW guy, but I do listen to the podcast reviews and watch some snippets on YouTube. I've only watched a couple of things related to Orange Cassidy, and I'm sold on him. I watched his match with Pac and loved it. My question is to you fellas, assuming that he's in WWE, is firstly, would Vince see him as a draw? And secondly, name three dream opponents for Freshly Squeezed. I think he would do well in NXT and would then fail horribly on the main roster.
Yeah, I don't think they wouldn't get it long term. They don't really understand someone where you need to think about it for, like, I think the thing with Orange Cassidy in AEW, he's been very well presented and very well protected kind of as a feature. And you know, I think the partnership with Best Friends has done well to sort of get him over as well, while still having other people do some wrestling. You know, you can wear that gimmick out so quickly. And I think they've deployed the amount that Orange Cassidy does, because he's lazy, very cleverly. WWE would overexpose him within 2 weeks because they liked it, and you know they'd also make it. You know, I think they'd also do that thing that WWE likes to do, which is, here is your defined move set. So go out there and do those in a row, and he would do that every week for 10 weeks until you were tired of seeing it.
He would get the hashtag 3 week push. Abid says, after Backlash, Edge and Randy Orton ends with Edge challenging Drew to be the big feud ending into SummerSlam. Lesnar returns to start a feud with Lashley. Do you think this could be the case? I think Edge might take a bit of time off after this Randy feud. I mean, maybe I would have thought he'd have something at SummerSlam though. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to see him go after Drew. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
I think Randy wins this match at Backlash and sets up a third. For SummerSlam, and that is, you know, Edge isn't going to win two matches on the trot and just be like, well, that's that done then. I've won I'm the best wrestler and the best person who fights in a gym. I think, you know, this is going to be something that goes for one final one. They want this to be, they're kind of trying, I mean, you don't call it the greatest wrestling match ever and not try to position this as one of the all-time feuds of modern WWE history. Like, It's got to go for three, I think.
XO Jailer says, do you think that maybe Deonna Purrazzo didn't go to AEW because of Marty? They did break up a while ago. Maybe AEW didn't reach out to her because of her loyalty, because of their loyalty to Marty. Maybe they did, but she feels like she didn't want to go to the company with her ex's close friends. She also pulled out of All In so she could sign with WWE. Maybe that could have left a bad taste in their mouth. So yeah, this is kind of like, I was talking about this on the AEW yesterday about how Deonna Purrazzo chose to go to Impact. And that's speculation on my part. I don't know if she did choose. I don't know if AEW reached out. I don't know what feelers were put out there. But I don't know whether, like, I don't know. Maybe there's something to do with Marty. I don't know on that one, though. And specifically the All In thing, I don't think people would have a real, like, I don't think they don't feel like a petty company that would do something like that.
This look, I think if she goes to AEW, she's a medium fish in a slightly bigger pond. If she goes to Impact, she's a big fish in a smaller pond, and she has more opportunity to probably be the champion. Like, you know, Impact has also had Tessa Blanchard be the top champion. So I think it's worth considering that, you know, as someone still quite young and on the rise, this is a really good bargaining tool. Rather than go to AEW and be like in the mix on a women's division that really features four women currently, and probably two of them still need a go on the top title before we're going to get to Deonna Purrazzo, she could probably walk into Impact and be instantly inserted into the same leagues as Taya Valkyrie, etc. You know,
which is everything. Like, she went down there and she's already, like, you know, in line to face Jordan Grace. Like, and as I said in the AEW review yesterday, like, I think Deonna made the smart move, because Impact does do a very bad job with its women's division. And I think if you are looking at your options that are available to you, I'd have probably picked Impact, because at least they take it seriously. Like, it's not just like, you would have just, as you said, you would have just gone there and just been part of the mix. And it's a women's division that's currently, it's on a treadmill going absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, I think it's much better to be like, I'm going to get some championships, and then when we have the conversation with AEW, or I have another conversation with WWE, I can go, I'm a champion. Like, you know, I've done this for this company. You should be putting me in a similar position.
Jobber JJ said, what three wrestlers would you like to do Impractical Jokers with? For me, it's Orange Cassidy, Big E, and Drake Maverick. Xavier Woods, I think, would be amazing on Impractical Jokers. The New Day is who I would like to do Impractical Jokers with. I think
that'd be... What is Impractical Jokers?
Oh, mate, it's a prank show on Comedy Central.
Wouldn't want to do it.
I think
hate pranks.
Well, the thing is, what I like about Impractical Jokers is that it's the pranks are always on them. They're not pranking other people, which I think is always quite mean-spirited. But they are literally, it's four friends who are just trying to embarrass each other. And I think that's funnier.
So you're happy to embarrass the New Day, is what you're saying.
If I mate with them, yeah.
Yeah, okay, fine.
And you have to be
For this question to work, we need to befriend the New Day for a period of time that makes it okay to rib on them in a public space and public sphere. Okay, so we've got some work cut out for us. let's send some emails off later today.
Nick Corvello, who do you think will be the first AEW woman to jump ship to WWE? So this comes off the back of a question we had last week about who was going to be, you know, who would be the first person from AEW to go over to WWE. Nick's got a very sort of like very detailed, which I'm unfortunately about to cut down due to time. Penelope Ford was his answer, which I think is a very smart answer, actually. Who could be the first AEW woman to jump ship to WWE?
Brit.
But I was going to say Brit. Yeah, to be honest. Yeah,
Brits, like, you know, this is not to be like, it's not that she doesn't, you know, I think it's facilitated by Adam Cole's status within the company. It makes it very easy to sort of be like, you know, wrestling is quite a nepotistic industry. And I think Brit would deserve it as well, because she is one of the top women on AEW. And I think WWE would think it's a bit of a coup to take her from them.
I also think that WWE would love Nyla Rose. Because she's such an imposing figure I think they really like that, and I think they'd like to have another sort of monster heel on their roster. Chris Gardner, this is an NXT related question, just ties into what your thoughts were earlier. How do you think Rhea Ripley's storyline is going to play out? I'd like to see it go on for a year, have her keep losing matches, and then really snap one day. Thanks all, Jam That Jam.
Yeah, I don't really know, because they've done the sort of like getting her heat back, putting Robert Stone in the bin, but I feel like Robert Stone might end up being like, I think they might come to sort of like an agreement. I feel like this feels like it's on the cards. But yeah, I think, like I said earlier, like I would prefer to see Ripley drop down the card a little bit, maybe go when time is right, go back to NXT UK for a little while, and then we build to her versus Charlotte at TakeOver before Mania, and this time Rhea comes out on top.
Callum, I've been wondering about Wrestle Kingdom next year. Do you think Will Ospreay could be in the main event for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship? Because that CM Punk match probably isn't going to happen. I've been saying it for years, I'd love to see Will climb up that card. And I thought he was going to when he won the Never Openweight Championship. And then, like, before you knew it, he was kind of back in the junior heavyweights. But I'd really like to see him progress up. But I think if I'm Gedo, you know, in booking this show, booking this company, I'm spending a bit of time doing this. You know, you take Will through the US title, you take him through the Intercontinental title. While the titles that don't mean quite as much, you are at least establishing him in that heavyweight division, then have him go on an amazing run in the G1 to then build him up into Wrestle Kingdom. Like, I think it's not next year's Wrestle Kingdom, not even the year after, possibly the year after that is when I would be looking to have Will Ospreay in that main event Tokyo Dome IWGP Heavyweight Championship match.
Yeah, from following on Twitter, he's certainly piling on the pounds in terms of muscle mass to look heavyweight. So I imagine he's going to be positioned pretty heavyweight coming back.
Callum also asks, do you have a TV show that you've watched more than once in its entirety? For example, during Watchdown, I've watched Lost twice because it's the greatest TV show of all time.
Twice?
Yeah.
I don't watch things again. I, generally speaking, like I watch things. I've watched all of Friends, obviously, like about 7 million times, just accidentally and on purpose.
For our American viewers, because that always does confuse people when we like when Brits say, oh, we've watched Friends 20,000 times. It is on every single day in this country on various channels.
Yeah. And, like, and then it also then everyone I've lived with ever has been into it. So it's always just someone puts it on.
This show ended like 15 years ago, maybe even more than that. It is still on when I say it's on every single day, multiple times during that day. They will show about 15, 20 episodes a day of Friends. Yeah. It is on a lot.
It's what Channel 4's other channels do for the rest of like the mid bit of the day before they're like, they've got one, these channels that are built on like two or three shows that air around 8 o'clock in the evening and 9 o'clock. And then the rest of the day, it's just Friends.
It's on Comedy Central. Yeah. It's on Comedy Central all throughout the day. It's on Comedy Central Extra all throughout the day. It's on Channel 5 now as well. Because it's not on Channel 4 or E4 anymore. So Comedy Central have now got it. So anyway, it's on a lot, which is why we've all seen Friends quite a lot.
Buffy is something I've seen a few times as well. Like, that was by choice. That's not on TV anymore, but I've watched a lot of Buffy.
Twilight Zone, the original Twilight Zone run, I've watched multiple times over. One I've doing quite recently is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like, when it ends, I just feel the urge to just go right back to the start again. Love it. Dylan says, which wrestlers need to change their finishers and what should they use instead? Funny enough, Adam's done a video about this. Adam has got the most definitive list on that, I would say. Go and check that out over in his lists playlist. And lastly, Adam Southfield said, I've been wondering for a while now, if Brody Lee has more of an open contract allowing him to work New Japan shows, do you think he'd carry over his Dark Order gimmick, or would he do something slightly different?
I mean, if you're a televised product, I think you would want people to be that character elsewhere. Like, it's different. I think it's different if you're just doing a bunch of indie shows and you're sort of slightly different characters in different things. But I think the fact that AEW is on mainstream US TV, you don't want to undermine the Exalted One character by going to Japan and being just like a different Brody Lee, even just Brody Lee and not Mr. Brody Lee, I think is probably too much. So yeah, I think for the set, I think they wouldn't let him go unless those sort of things were in place to protect what they've got going.
Indeed. Right. Well, that is all we have got time for on this edition of the WrestleTalk Magazine show. Thank you all so much for watching. Please click the videos that have appeared on screen right now to catch up with the latest WrestleTalk awesome things. I've been Luke Cohen. This has been El Fake de Laurie Blake. And that was wrestling. Have you got much on for the weekend?
Apart from playing Smash Brothers, no, not really. No, I don't have any plans, actually. It'd be nice to sort of relax and not do anything, I think. I've got some, like, there's all the PlayStation 5 stuff come out, so I'm kind of tempted to be like, should I just play The Last of Us, get ready for Last of Us 2 next weekend? I might do that. Might stream it, you never know. I'll see. But yeah, I'm quite interested in playing Last of Us again, but I'm also quite concerned that I'll be afraid and won't want to do it.
Yeah, I've played a bit of The Last of Us because I used one of those like couple of week trials of PlayStation. What's their streaming
now?
PlayStation Now, right? So I kind of subscribed to that for a 2 week free trial period and played Last of Us then, but I didn't get far enough into it to really get hooked on it. But now, having seen like all the reviews that are coming out for The Last of Us 2, has made me go like, maybe I should. Because like when I got my PlayStation or my PS4, I bought like a load of games that, you know, were quite cheap, and one of those was The Last of Us that I think got remastered for the PlayStation 4, and it got sent to me with no disc. So so it's kind of sat there taunting me a little bit that I have paid money for it, but I've never actually played it. So
sad. It was on, I don't know if you have PlayStation Plus, but it was on PlayStation Plus for download for free the other week, a couple of months ago. I've got when I was working at ITN, Sony sent me Last of Us Remastered. So I've got like a bunch of games from that period that I was just like getting sent, and I was like, I've not played any of these. I played Last of Us when it was out on PS3 and haven't played the remastered one. I tried starting it again and got about an hour in and was like, again, scared. Don't like the clickers. Really don't like the clickers. So
yeah, I mean, I do need to give it more of a fair shake and stick. But then again, I could say that about a lot of games that I've not given.
Have you finished Spider-Man yet?
Yes, I have finished that one.
Okay, good, because there's, you know, Spider-Man Miles Morales is coming out at the end of the year.
Yeah, I saw that.
So they're ready for you, Luke. Another 2 year project there.
Exactly. I'm just spreading things out because, as me and Ollie were talking about on the AEW podcast yesterday, the pair of us have just burned through this season of Queer Eye, you know, and like we did that in less than a week. And now what?
Now what will I do? I'll have to wait for whatever the next thing Netflix drops this weekend is, which will be something, Luke. There's always something.
Well, you say that, and you're on the money, but not the same thing. iPlayer have now got every episode of Series 2 of What We Do in the Shadows. So
I need to watch. hang up. I need to go. Got places to be.
So that is probably what me and my wife will be starting this weekend, which I'm so excited about.
Oh, I love that. I drank blood and now I'm a wizard.
Stupid bloody cursed hat.
the bit where they just throw the bone off the roof. That's what, you know, when we did the money in the bank, predictions, and I was saying how Otis might just run off a roof if someone throws a cake or something. That's what I was picturing in my head, the werewolf doing that. Brilliant.
Amazing. Right. Well, that is all we've got time for on this edition of the WrestleTalk podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. Before we go, I'm going to ask you for your thoughts on the PlayStation 5.
I haven't really. I've seen the pictures of the console, and I very space age looking. It looks like something that BioWare would have designed for a Mass Effect game or something. It seems quite cool. I don't necessarily want a big sort of white box in my living room because I don't think it goes with my decor. But that's another story. I think the games that they've got lined up for it, like that presentation yesterday, was just like balls to the wall. Like, yeah, you're going to want this. We've got the Spider-Man game. We've got Gran Turismo. We've got Horizon sequel. Like, this was just pure
Resident Evil 8.
This was like pure PlayStation fan fiction style, like, presentation. My only concern is they've not talked about the price yet. And I get that, you know, like, and I think that's because that's not a positive conversation that we're going to have. So they're trying to keep that away from this reveal. And so I'm just imagining they're going to be like, it's £500.
Yeah.
Because there's already been some sort of leaked, not leaked, but like people have been putting like placeholder pages for the games and stuff as well. And it seems like some of them are 70. So there's like another £10 increase in how much games are going to cost you. I don't know whether this is just people speculating, but you know, this is all ultra HD Blu-ray disc drive nonsense. So maybe there is a higher production cost of putting them on disc, but then they do have the digital only version of the PlayStation. So maybe through the PlayStation store, they'll be selling games at a more reduced, in line with what we expect a game to cost, rate. But who knows, because you don't want to do that and undercut brick and mortar retail sellers. It is a very hard world to be in. I'll be interested when the price comes out. That's when I'll be really interested in this console. At the moment, it feels like a sort of far-fetched. It's like I'm also interested in Bang Olufsen TVs, but I can't afford those either. So
the Spider-Man game, did they also say that's coming out on PS4?
They didn't, but I think some of the first sort of wave will be cross-compatible. But I think they're more likely to do it sort of, if it's came out recently on PS4, you can play it on PS5, rather than this game's also going to be on PS4. I think it's Spider-Man is the one that they're going to use to push people to buy the PlayStation 5.
Yeah, because that Spider-Man game was good, wasn't it? It was pretty good. Slightly repetitive at times, but very good.
I mean, that's all games now. Please go to 100 towers and climb them all.
Because that might have been the game that was famous, but I don't think I'd get one for, like, I mean, I bought my PlayStation 4 about 3 years after its release. So, like, I've got a few more years yet of this console before I get into a new one.
I wasn't bothered about the PlayStation 5, and slowly over the last few weeks I've been like, oh, well, but I want one. I've got I had all the other PlayStations at launch. I want this one at launch.
Right. Well, that is all we've got time for on this edition of the podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. We will be back. Well, Andy and Pete will be back tomorrow with the SmackDown review, and then it's Backlash this Sunday. We're going to be live streaming our reactions to it, and there'll be a review of that in full on Monday for your listening pleasure. Thank you all so much for listening. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.